The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning, a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topic
and asks what you think.
So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. 9 o'clock hour. We got a lot of stuff going on. The state lawsuit against the manufacturer of OxyContin, soft peddling the addictive nature of it so that maybe reps weren't fully enough informed. Maybe doctors weren't either. We'll see. Actual doctors in touch here on our lines in a moment. But we've got a couple of congressional races we're going to poke into. 6 and 5. Those are the ones that have runoff suspense looming in the voting, which takes is early voting over here a couple of days. An actual voting event, of course, is May 22nd. Bunny Pounds will join us at the bottom of the hour. She is running against Lance Gooden in the Jeb Hensarling District 5. The Joe Barton vacancy will be filled by either Jake Elzey or our guest right here. We've had both these gentlemen on before, and Ron Wright returns. Ron, welcome back to the show. How you doing, sir?
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Mark.
Great to have you. Well, you're very, I'm glad to hear. And so T-minus like 6 days. How's the race going? What have the issues been? I know you've been talking to a lot of people. How do you see this thing shaping up?
It's shaping up great for us. You know, we finished the primary night with 45% out of 11 candidates. We felt, you know, very good about that. And we've been working ever since. We're working now. We're walking neighborhoods. We've knocked on over 1,000 doors, several thousand doors since the primary. We're mailing. We're calling. We're doing everything we can. We're not going to take anything for granted. We believe we're going to do very well. Our polling suggests that we're going to do very well.
Here's my universal question I always ask everybody, especially when we're down to two people and it's runoff time. Have you noticed in any single appearances, joint appearances, campaign literature, are there any real issue differences between you and Jake Elzey?
Well, there are. You know, I think immigration and the border wall is one.
Like what? Where do you differ?
I've been very consistent with my answers on that, and you know, he hasn't. And so, you know, people know what I'm going to do. They know who I am, and they know that I'm a proven conservative, and I will fight for them when I get to Washington.
It's funny because I hear everybody, I talk to everybody. So is it a consistency thing that the Jake hasn't been like for the wall as often as you have or as consistently as you have? Because he certainly seems to be for it now.
He has not been consistent in what he says. You know, you can't say to one group that, you know, you want to give green cards to Dreamers and then to another group say you're opposed to amnesty. Because that's the very definition of amnesty.
So is that an amnesty issue or a wall issue?
Well, and on the wall, you can't say to one group that you want a technology-based solution, his words, and then to another group say you want to build the wall. I've been consistent. I absolutely support President Trump's plan to build a physical barrier at the border. We've got to secure the border. We've got to stop this illegal immigration. We need to ban sanctuary cities and stop the lottery. We need to revamp the whole system. It needs to have a comprehensive reform.
As we get closer to the 22nd, obviously experience, resumes, et cetera, you've done a lot of things. Tax assessor, collector, been, you know, close to Joe in his you know, long years of service. I guess it's fair to ask both of you, how might your service differ from Joe's?
Well, it's a different time for one thing. You know, he went in the 1980s. And was able to serve with Ronald Reagan and has had a, you know, a very distinguished career for 34 years. The issues are different today, but some are still the same. You know, deficit spending was a big issue for Ronald Reagan. It's a huge issue for me. We cannot continue to go down the path we're on. $21 trillion debt. 2020, we're projected to have a $1 trillion deficit. And even the biggest economy in the world cannot sustain that. In the last CR that was passed, they did away with all the spending caps. You know, I'm prepared to go to Washington and stand up and say, no, enough of this. We can't continue to spend money like this. I supported the tax, the tax cuts and all that. Those are always good for sparking the economy. But if we don't address the spending side, it won't matter what we do on the tax side.
Are you a term limits guy?
I am. I have signed a pledge and I have publicly stated that I will serve no more than four terms. And then
wow.
I'm coming home.
Wow, because most of the term limits ideas do six, 12 total years, six House terms, but you would self-limit to even less than that.
Yes, I would.
Gotcha. There's been some stuff made about whether one will or will not join the Freedom Caucus, the Jim Jordan and various Mark Meadows, et cetera, et cetera. Is that something that you would envision doing?
I do. I can tell you that's something one has to be invited to join, but if I'm invited, I will. There's been a lot of mischaracterizations about that. Caucuses exist so that people of like mind on specific issues can band together and move an agenda. You don't have to walk in lockstep or vote exactly like they do every time. You're not tied to the group in that way. You still have each congressman has an independent voice, an independent vote, but the Freedom Caucus, I believe, is sort of the anchor on the right that will help hold Congress and try and prevent further erosions of liberty, but also on these the spending that I've been talking about. They're very committed to getting that under control, and I like that.
All right. The website is Right, WRIGHT, Right for Congress, the numeral 4, rightforcongress.com. Ron, we may talk to either or both of you again before we're done because the election is next Tuesday. Much appreciate your time, sir. Thanks as always.
Thanks for having me on.
You bet. God bless. That's Ron Wright. All right. Now, so we need to get Jake on here in short order. There was Governor Perry yesterday with his endorsement of Jake. Consistency on a wall. I mean, listen, I read all these guys' websites. Just saying here, okay? Jake's website. We need to build a wall. Like, hello? But, and enforceable choke points patrolled by manpower and reconnaissance air assets. Well, we'll ask him. Also ask him about the Freedom Caucus. I really like the Freedom Caucus. You know what the Freedom Caucus is? It's a whole bunch of conservatives. I think in his chat with the Dallas Morning News, which endorsed Jake, one of the reasons they didn't endorse Ron Wright is the Dallas Morning News doesn't like the Freedom Caucus. All right. Critical difference between Elsie and Wright is the former fighter pilot says he will not join the House Freedom Caucus, one of the farthest right groups on Capitol Hill. Yeah, thank God. Wright says he will join. Quote from Jake, each time you join a group, you lose a little skin in the game. What? My life has been about service, and the only people I'm interested in serving are the people of this district. Okay, I get that. I hear that a lot. And mostly it's about pledges. You know, hey, will you sign this pledge to do this or this pledge to do that? I am very anti-pledge. Not because, let's see, why am I anti-pledge? Not because it leaves you wiggle room and I want people to have wiggle room. I think pledges are like tap dancing for certain groups. And if you start to say, yes, I'll sign your pledge. Well, how about this pledge to do that or that pledge to do this or this pledge to do this or that pledge to you'll do nothing but, 57 groups will get you to dance to their piper's tune and sign our pledge. The wisest candidates always say, guess what? I will pledge to you right now to do A, B, C, or D, and you just trust me. And if I do you wrong, vote me out. Enough of this pledge nonsense. That having been said, if something exists like the House Freedom Caucus, you have the opportunity to join it. You're a conservative. You know what you do? You join it. Just saying. All right. Speaking of things that people should say that are of value. Thank you very much in Fort Worth, David, actual doctor. And David, thank you. Appreciate your call.
Well, thank you for having me. I wanted to comment on this whole thing with this opioid.
Yeah, let me set everybody up because Ken Paxton was on talking about suing Purdue Pharmaceuticals, makers of OxyContin, for misrepresenting the addictive dangers. Then a subsequent caller who had been in the pharmaceutical rep industry for a little bit said, "Man, like all kinds of sales jobs, there are people exaggerating things, minimizing the negatives, and ultimately doctors know what his point." Was, and that's why I'm glad you're here. Doctors know what they're doing. Doctors know the addictive properties of Oxy, and so how much responsibility is there? Go wherever you want. Take the floor. It's yours.
Well, first off, I would agree with him completely. You know, salesmen are salesmen. Do they lie? No, I don't know if they necessarily lie. But pharmaceutical reps are representing a medication. All their materials that are presented to physicians has to go through the FDA. 100% has to be cleared by the FDA. I don't think the FDA was complicit in any of this to try and get people addicted to opioids. That's preposterous.
Right.
And yes, we do know. We know that these medications are addictive. There's no question that OxyContin is addictive. Is it as addictive as a short-term oxycodone? No. Unless it's abused.
Uh-huh.
So people, if they choose to abuse a drug, it's going to be abused. So, for example, you look at the fentanyl, so the drug that's in the patch, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how is it being abused? Well, people take the gel out of the patch and they inject it, for goodness sake.
Good Lord.
Seriously.
Yeah, because all you can do is prescribe something. You cannot follow them around with a drone and see if they properly use it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And his point to the fact that the state of Texas has a checking system that you can check and see how patients are filling their prescriptions within the state of Texas. If somebody wants to, they're going to do like his aunt did. They're going to run around to other states and look. And there's no way we can ever know that.
No.
So it is a real issue. But the biggest challenge for this whole opioid issue is the fact that it's a cultural issue. Why do people want to be abusing medications? Why do we have this whole issue? It is a cultural issue. It's not a drug company issue.
And what do you think? This is maybe the most valuable observation that could be made about it. There's nothing magical that has changed the chemistry of the drug. It's about us. There's something about us. What do you think that, and no two patients are the same, but what do you think that is? What cultural phenomenon is leading to this type of abuse?
Well, we have a culture that now has a lot of emptiness. Needless to say, the breakdown of the family, the breakdown of common values, the breakdown of a supportive structure within a culture for health and well-being and human flourishing. None of that is really a part of the common culture anymore.
No, you're 1,000% right. I mean, that's preaching from a hymnal that I walk around with all the time. But here's my question. I can see how that would lead to the sort of the mind altering. You lead somebody to be stoned all the time, or lead somebody, God forbid, into acid or heroin or other reality changing things. Is Oxy and fentanyl, all these things, they're painkillers.
So maybe
I'm just dealing from profound lack of experience, which I hope to keep going for a lifetime. What is it about that? I guess something that makes you stop hurting after back surgery can also keep you on permanent mellow against the pain of life, I guess, eh?
Precisely. So the question is it inappropriate to treat somebody's pain? Because they have pain.
I know,
well,
sure.
As a physician, am I going to say, no, look, I know you are suffering, but tough crap. I'm not going to be able to give you the medication you need to treat your pain because you might get addicted.
Yeah, because there are 30 people over here, eating dog food and who have destroyed their lives. Because of them, I'm going to deny you a valuable medication that you would probably use properly.
That is correct. And so we have to be wiser.
Yeah.
We have to be wiser to the fact that the quote-unquote addictive personality or the person who has greater emotional needs is going to be more apt to become addicted to a medication that was appropriately prescribed for their problem.
Do you have to keep your eyes peeled? Okay, what kind of doctor are you? What's your practice?
Well, I'm both an internist and a hospice and palliative medicine doc.
Oh, bless your heart. They're
angels
among us. So here's the thing. So do you, other than your actual expertise about pain management and the effects of various things on the pain receptors of the body, have to keep your eyes peeled for who does and does not have the properties of an addictive personality?
You have to do it. And it's so difficult. And thankfully, this current measure by the administration to address the opioid epidemic from a multifaceted area, which particularly is looking at this, how do physicians prescribe opioids? How should we prescribe them? And really trying to address it not from the idea of what we've had in the last 5 years, this reactionary idea of just don't prescribe them, which is actually how do we appropriately prescribe them, and how do we also use non-medication treatments to treat pain? So I mean, I'm really happy to see this happening within the current administration.
What a spectacular call on multiple levels. Thanks for hanging on to offer it to us. I really appreciate it, David. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. Wow. So don't leap toward, you know, jump to prescribing various opioids. Maybe find another couple of things first. Keep your eyes peeled for addictive behaviors and properties in those patients. Be aware of what you're doing, and also be aware that ours is a culture that is wide open, that is very inviting to the kind of mind-dulling, nerve-dulling, escape-from-reality experience that gets people hooked on fentanyl the same way they'd get, the same way somebody was hooked on anything else over the decades. Whew. We're a messed up country. We're a messed up culture, man. Listen, all around us are wonderful, upstanding people. I am not pessimistic. I'm not pessimistic about our country. I'm not even pessimistic about our culture. It is riven with horrible problems, and I believe that all of them are solvable. Every single problem we have, and if I can borrow something from Easter, there's not a problem you have. There's not a problem you have that a good resurrection can't solve. You hearing me there? 9:24. Be right back. All right. In a moment, we're going to pivot from 6 to 5. Over in 5, the Jeb Hensarling vacancy is State Rep Lance Gooden up against political consultant Bunny Pounds. Bunny will join us, which means just right around the bend, obviously Lance will join us and Jake Elsey will join us, the other halves of those respective runoffs. And this is big stuff, man, because these names that I'm, you know, bandying about here, they are going to become history. Just as, you know, Pete Sessions, Michael Burgess, Louis Gohmert, Kenny Marchant, Joe Barton and Jeb Hensarling and Sam Johnson are the names that will no longer be here because they're all retiring. But these are the names that will take their place. Van Taylor will absolutely be the successor of Sam Johnson. Districts 5 and 6 yet to be determined. By whom? By you. So we're taking a look at the choices you face. All right, at 9:30, easy choice for me. We head into the newsroom. I'm Mark Davis. Here's Gordon Griffin. In the musical birthday world, Janet Jackson, Little Rhythm Nation. She is 52. All right, let's get into the rhythm of some of these congressional races. We just had a chat with Ron Wright up at the top of this hour, battling Jake Elsey, whom we will now subsequently welcome in District 6. Lance Gooden, state rep, is in District 5, looking to be Jeb Hensarling's successor up against this lady who joins us on the phone right now, Bunny Pounds in District 5. Bunny, welcome back. How you doing?
Thanks, Mark, for having me on.
Very nice to have you. So, closing days inside a week. How's it going? What are the issues people are talking to you about? And what do you think is going to shape things up here on Tuesday night and next week?
Well, we've had an incredible run. I've had joy and peace the whole time. We've been running a 7-county race from the very beginning, which I believe is going to show up in the numbers on May 22nd. We've had a great week. Rafael Cruz came out and did 2 events for me in Dallas County and Kaufman County. Saw Ken Paxton, our attorney general, who endorsed me this week. Saw Wayne Christian in Athens yesterday, our railroad commissioner that's endorsed me. Louis Gohmert endorsed me, our congressman in the East, this weekend. So we've had, our momentum has been huge the last 3 weeks, and there's not a doubt in my mind, Mark, we're taking this over the finish line on top.
You mentioned a seven-county race, which is interesting because on paper it looks like here you are with a lot of Dallas close-in familiarity. Lance is from out east, and maybe he's got a hill to climb closer to Dallas, and you've got a hill to climb out in the hinterlands of District 5. Have you viewed it as that? Listen, I'm known in Dallas. I got to get out east.
Well, the reality is, Mark, I've spent the last decade of my life serving in this congressional district alongside Congressman Hinserling. So no one knows this district more than I do, and that's why we have hundreds of endorsements from the grassroots and the donors all throughout seven counties. This has really come down. It's not about geography. Yes, I have a great community in Garland where I'm from in the 5th Congressional District. Dallas County folks know me, but the rest of them do as well. This is about ideology. And this race has come down to me, the movement conservative candidate, and Lance Gooden, the 5th most liberal Republican in the Texas House. That is what we've been talking about, and that is how even the Dallas Morning News defined the race a few days ago. Here's a man who 70% of his colleagues are in the Texas Conservative Coalition. He's not invited to join. He's got a 42% F rating with Texans for Fiscal Responsibility. The 5th Congressional District wants a solid conservative that's a fighter for limited government, and that's what this race is about, really.
Resumes are interesting. Lance obviously has been a legislator, and you've been an activist and fundraiser and consultant with no elected office experience. But, gee, the president didn't have any either. And is it almost a plus, or is it a non-issue? What do you think?
No, I think it's a plus. I'm not a professional politician. I never wanted to run for office. It really came out of a need and my heart cry to make sure that the 5th Congressional District was represented well, again, with a solid, real conservative. That's what this has been about, and I think it is a plus. When you have a candidate on the other side that has demonstrated that he's part of the Austin swamp, taking over $1 million from PACs, registered lobbyists, folks outside the district, even labor union checks during his career in Austin. The district wants somebody else. And that's why I jumped in the fray and have sacrificed my professional life and my career and everything to make sure that the people that I love and have served for the last decade with Congressman Hinserling are represented well.
Last thing, once you get to Congress, what do you think, your voting record as opposed to Lance's voting record might differ? I mean, what are actual things that Congress faces where you think you really would take different views? And, of course, we'll ask him the same thing.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. I believe, I will be a strong fighter against deficit spending and our national debt. I wake up every morning thinking about this $21 trillion national debt that is going to bankrupt our children and grandchildren. And I think my opponent has a history in Austin of raising taxes, of being one of the Republicans that voted with the Democrats against Governor Abbott's property tax reform package, raising fees that we all know fees being raised end up being taxes to the everyday American in Texas. So I think in this issue, there is a stark difference. And many other issues with the social conservative issues, having somebody that's passionate about our religious liberties, really passionate about being 100% pro-life all of the time, that's extremely important. And I think those are the differences in how we will serve in Congress.
The campaign website is bunnypounds.com, bunny with an I, B-U-N-N-I, pounds.com. Bunny, thanks. I'm sure we'll be talking again between now and the race. And once it's all settled, I'm sure we'll talk again either way soon. And I much appreciate it. Thanks today.
Look forward to it. Thank you so much, Mark.
Thank you. Bunny Pounds, B-U-N-N-I, bunnypounds.com. Okay, so there's the Ron Wright and Bunny Pounds halves of those races. So, shoot, I don't care if it's tomorrow. We'll feelers are out for the Lance Gooden and Jake Elzey halves of those races. And by the way, throughout all of this, we have just 17 minutes left today, but tomorrow, I know y'all are getting buried in campaign ads and flyers and mailers and stuff. And that's always an eyebrow raiser and a conversation starter. So, let me hear how you think things are playing out. 866-660-5759, 943. We are in Arlington. Jason, Mark Davis, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Hi, good.
Big fan of the show, big fan of yours.
Thank you, appreciate it.
So listen, I know you feel the same way as I do about these ridiculous political ads where, you know, you get two people having breakfast and, you know, one's a male, one's a female. It sounds more like they're juggling China than they're actually eating. So I kind of had a technical question. You know, I know that, I can't remember if it's Dan Patrick or Ken Paxton, they kind of got this weekly conservative minute that they
boy, that's
air.
Pat Dan, I don't know what kind of campaign chest they got, but I hear Dan Patrick 37 times a day on this radio station alone. Converse, hi, I'm Dan Patrick, proud to be here. And by the way, they're awesome, they're great
and
ads.
I love them.
And Dan is going to cruise to re-election, but never plays it safe.
So the question is, it's a technical question, it's inside baseball. So, you know, you know, these guys produce these commercials and they put them on the air. Is there a price difference between, you know, doing one really lousy commercial, or maybe we could cut them a break for giving us two or three different versions that are a little bit better?
Okay, let me share.
What can you do to help us give us some better air time
so they're not
patronizing us?
No, well, they get to, what a spectacular question. I love pulling back the curtain. Political advertising is sold by every radio station in employing a somewhat different set of rules. I don't know what the exact term is, but there is a kind of a bargain rate that we need to offer. We need to offer all political advertisers something that is in line, measured against what the most favorable rate is that's available at that time on that show. So whether it's me or in Gallagher or in Larry Elder or in Hannity, it's commensurate with whatever it's at any given point. A political ad you're hearing is paying the least expensive rate of any ad being heard right there.
And
it's kind of funny. I don't know why that is. I guess it's to create more opportunity for political expression, blah, blah, blah. That's fine. That's fine. As far as what the content is, that's called whatever they want. Every ad that you hear, you can know one thing about every ad you hear, and that is that that is precisely what the candidate wanted you to hear. Whether it is an insightful, thoughtful missive about conservatism, or a couple of people at some pretend diner having a pretend conversation. Hey, Bill, I hear that Joe Blow used to be a cartel drug dealer. I did not know that. Son of a gun. I know who I'm voting for. By the way, why do they run those? Because they work. Because we can make fun of them. But it kind of adds a folksy. It's like, wow, maybe this is two real people having a conversation about such a race. I chuckle a little bit myself, but they are fairly effective delivery systems for what one campaign wants you to know about the other. Like at the phony diner, we say, well, I don't know, Ted, did you know that candidate A once did X? Well, no, I did not know that. Knock me over with a feather, Bill. So it's just a creative way. It might be a way to capture attention more than just a voiceover guy saying, did you know that candidate A once accepted B, C, D, and E from person F? It's all just the artistry of advertising.
Fair enough. I guess I would just ask that, you know, with your contacts, we as a people, we are much smarter than I think what maybe these advertisers are putting together. We don't need to be patronized in that way. Come on, be a little more creative.
Okay, so here's two things about that, because boy, do I hear this sentiment a lot. Number one, this is why I like having these people on, so that we can actually have conversations, learn a little something about them, ask them about their ads, ask them about things that their opponents' ads say about them, et cetera, in a time frame that lasts more than 60 seconds. What do you mean? Are you kind of fond of the Dan Patrick ad that takes 60 seconds just talking about, hey, I'm Dan Patrick, I'm conservative, here's some stuff I've done, thank you, boom.
I do. I love it. Yep. It's simple. It's here's what I think, here's what I'm doing.
Yep.
You know, simple, clean message.
I really share your taste. I really do.
Chest
he has
money.
A massive, but you know what else? He has the blessing, relative blessing of not getting his brains beat beaten in by a rival who's nipping at his heels. So if you're running against me and you're 40 points ahead of me and you're just flat out going to win, oh, you can be as thoughtful and as relaxed all day long. But if you and I are in a pitched battle where it's going to come down to just what a few voters do, and let's not use you and me. If it's person A and person B, they're going to bludgeon the holy you-know-what out of each other.
Yeah, but you know what, Mark? The ironic thing is that he doesn't have to put out any ads.
No, he does not.
So maybe we get some of these guys that are good, these guys that we like, and maybe they spend a little bit more time on air telling us about what they're doing and help us spread the message of what we're trying to do.
Jason, I love the psychology of all this and the opportunity to kind of, as you say, inside baseball. Great, great, great call. Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here, Mark. You betcha. 866-660-5759. Yeah, and there's another thing that happens at this time. How did I phrase it? During the lead up to the actual primary, there were a couple of behaviors that were kind of particularly annoying to me. And I haven't heard so much of it now, but perhaps I soon will. That is somebody who's not that conservative offering themselves up as like a pillar of conservatism. And the second thing is somebody taking an opponent who might have one little chink in the armor of conservatism, maybe one little thing, and painting them as if they're Chuck Schumer. So, by the way, the psychology of that is in a close election, or it's perceived as a close election, most folks are thoughtful, going on track record, resume, beliefs, interviews, debates. Other people are going to remember the last four ads they heard. The last four ads in which they heard, you know, Joe Blow is a sorry, blah, blah, blah. Really? I didn't know that, Frank. Bill, yes, he is. I wouldn't let him, you know, wash my car. And people go, well, God, blech. And they vote accordingly. So that's why things like that run. 950, Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer. And in our remaining minute, let me do something nice for you. As you know, Mike Gallagher is in town. Got that Guys and Dolls June 8th opening night. And we got a listener lunch featuring Mike and me and you. And it's my first opportunity to do an on-air giveaway. And doggone it, let's do it. If you can make Crossroads Diner next Wednesday, 11:30. Next Wednesday, a week from today, 11:30. This is your commitment to come. Mike Gallagher with me at the listener lunch at Crossroads. Be callers 2468. Let's do four people and a plus one right now. Callers 2468 at 866-660-5759. That is your blood oath, 866-660-5759, that you're showing up at Crossroads Diner next Wednesday, 11:30, for Mike Gallagher, me, Magical Tom Fleming, food. It'll be great. So for producer Rhonda K. Moreland, while she gathers those that are now pouring in, and Shane Bell of the Shane Bell Band, ShaneBellBand.com. Check it out for new gigs, new tunes. I'm Mark Davis. God bless our country and our troops and our families. And, of course, Gordon Griffin in the newsroom, whom you are about to hear. And I hope you have just a fantastic rest of the day. We'll gather together tomorrow morning at 7 for our Thursday show. North Korea summit on or off. Who knows what will be there. I'll be there. Look forward to it. See you then.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.